If you're someone who has a passion for cut flowers, our environment, and wants to make the world more beautiful, you're in the right place. Whether you're growing flowers for pleasure or profit, I'm on a mission to empower flower enthusiasts and professionals to help change the world around them. Whether you're just starting out and need a helping hand, or are looking to scale a substantial flower business, I'm your cut flower woman. Welcome to the Cut Flower Podcast.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm so delighted to welcome Sue Reed to our podcast today. I first had the opportunity to meet Sue online, as Sue is the chairperson of the WFGA. More of that later. But it's an organisation that changes lives within horticulture, and that's at its core values. I am a board member of this organisation and can honestly say I'm honoured to be involved. So perhaps tell us, listeners, about your background, how you got to where you are, why you agreed to be the chairperson. You must have been mad. And yeah, where did it all start?
Oh, thank you for inviting me on today, Ros. It's really lovely to sit and have a chat with you. As you said, we have met before, but we haven't had a chance just to sit down and chew the fat. So it's great to be here. I worked in telecoms for many years. I was in sales and schlepping around the M25 and up and down the country and midnight phone calls to the States and all those sort of things. And had my children and decided that I just couldn't go back to do this anymore. Came across the WFGA, the Working for Gardeners Association, and decided to give it a go. So I became what we call a rags trainee, so work and retrain as a gardener. I graduated 20 years ago, some time ago. And I have to say, I am probably the ultimate poster girl in that it absolutely changed my life. It really did, because from telecoms to working in horticulture, I then went on to run my own gardening business. I then got into education. I started in adult ed and then went into further education, teaching at colleges. And I left that a couple of years ago. And I'm now a horticultural assessor and examiner. I'm chair of the WFGA. So I've gone full circle on the whole thing.
Wow. So it did change lives, completely changed lives.
Absolutely changed my life. Yes. Yeah.
But I think that because I've had some trainees as here on the farm and I then employ them because they're brilliant. And I don't let them go. We've got a gate that locks and I lock it and they just joke about that. I'm not letting them out because they come with a really determination and motivation and they do want to change their lives. And they do change their lives. They're generally women. I've had four women who are in the middle of their lives and they've done all sorts of jobs, marketing or accountancy or all sorts of things. And they just want to change their lives. They don't want to run all over the country anymore and be in corporate world. And they love being outdoors. So it suits them. And then they, you know, if you have a few, they all become friends. And then you have cake days and birthdays and holidays. And it becomes like a community. It's brilliant. I love it. Absolutely love it. So that's how I became involved. I started having trainees and I thought, oh, this is amazing. But I think it's how you get it out there that it even exists. It's tough.
Yes, it is. I think we're one of the country's best kept secrets, but not everybody knows. And we're not just an organisation for training professional gardeners. We offer all sorts of courses for anybody that's interested.
I think that's not known. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We have workshops. We do online workshops. We have courses in fantastic gardens, things on, you know, tilling, propagation. Today, a whole load of our members have been at Hampton Court working in the kitchen garden on one of our practical skills days, which is what a fantastic experience that is. And that's open to, you don't have to be a professional gardener to do that. It's a great opportunity, really is.
So you've got two prongs to it. Tell us a little bit more about the work of the FGA, because obviously you've got the people who've got gardens themselves and organisations that have got large gardens, so the land, if you like. And then you've got the people who want to retrain and put the two together. And then you've got the membership and then you've got these other areas. Tell us each little bit about it.
Okay. So as I said, we are a membership organisation. So you can join, you can come on our practical skills days, although you can access some of our courses without being a member, but we'd like you to join us because we're a nice organisation. We have a garden recruitment network. If you're looking for new employment, We have some discounts on nurseries and schemes that we offer. And of course, we have newsletters and information coming out all the time. So that's one part of it. The other part is our RAG scheme. So that's our training scheme. So back in 1993, we noticed this gap in the market. There's lots and lots of horticultural training for youngsters coming out of school. There's the RHS courses as well. But if you want to have practical training, there wasn't very much happening.
No.
So we set up the RAG scheme, which essentially matches people who want to train as professional gardeners. So we're looking for expert owners who can help train a potential gardener, or someone there's a head gardener who's available to do that. And they will take on one of our trainees 2 days a week for a year. The agreement is they get paid the national living wage. I think it's a very, very reasonable scheme.
Totally. Yeah.
And as you said, you get a really enthusiastic, keen gardener who wants to learn, but who comes with all these other employment skills as well, because quite likely they've been in other industries. So they know all about getting there on time. They know all about problem solving. They know about teamwork. So it's a fantastic experience for the gardener and the head gardener. And it's a fantastic experience for our trainees. So that we, as you say, we've got two strings to our bow, if you like, the membership and the training scheme.
So obviously you want more people to come forward who have lands and gardens.
Oh, Ross. You are one of the people that causes us problems.
Yes, definitely.
You keep your trainees, and this is what happens. We are victims of our own success. Quite often, you've spent a year employing somebody in the garden. You've trained them. They're really fantastic. You want to keep them. We understand that. But that means that we build up this waiting list of trainees who want to take up the scheme, and just we can't find a training garden for them. So we are really keen to hear from people who think they might be able to help us in that.
Yeah, I need another one, by the way. But yeah, we can talk about that.
You're on the list.
I can add another one. They're all going. Yeah, exactly. We're all going. Oh, gosh, all the team are going, oh, can we have another one? Okay, I'll talk to Sue. I said there are two areas, and obviously finding trainings and placements and landowners. It's a matchmaking made in heaven, I think. So how can our listeners get involved? I know recently you went to Horatio's garden, and I've got a massive admiration. I'm a fan of Horatio's, and I have spoken to Dr. Olivia Chappell on a podcast, and I was involved. I've been involved for a few years now. So the calendar I did at Christmas was for Horatio's garden. The prophet went to Horatio's garden. So I've been a really keen follower, and I'd love to go up and see Sheffield, which is the latest addition to them.
Yeah. Harrison Bug, I believe. Yeah, very nice.
So I'd like to do that. And I've spoken to a few of the head gardeners as well at some of these Horatio's gardens. But you've just recently met somebody, did something. What have you been doing?
That's right. I met Kath Moss, who is their new garden director of gardens, lots and lots of horticultural experience. And we met down in Salisbury, as they are a charity that works with people with spinal injuries. And they have, I believe, 6 or 7 gardens around the country, and each one of them is attached to an NHS spinal unit, but completely self-funded. So they're all funded by donations and charity organisations and individual sponsors. And we have a gardener in 5 of these gardens. And these gardens are absolutely amazing. I was really lucky. I went last Friday. The sun shone, which is absolute miracle at the moment. We came out of the rain and it was gorgeous. And they are just beautiful, incredibly calm, restful places. And they support the patients with spinal injuries just to rehabilitate, to come to terms with it, to work out how they're going to move forward in their new lives. And not only that, they work with the families as well, which was really nice. There's lots of children around the garden, and that was really encouraging to see. So it's a great experience for our trainees, really fabulous, because all these gardens are designed by significant garden designers. The one I went to see was designed by Clive West. Bunny Guinness has been involved, as say Harrison Bug are doing the Sheffield one. So they are fabulous gardens, really gorgeous. So the trainee gets this great gardening experience, but they also get the opportunity to experience therapeutic horticulture, which is a really interesting area and so worthwhile. But of course, they're funded by the charitable organisation. They're not funded by the NHS. They are funded by donations. So it's very much dependent upon these donations coming through as to whether these gardens can continue to function to such a high standard and to be so supportive. And it would be really fantastic to find somebody who might like to sponsor one of our trainees in one of the gardens, especially the new garden in Sheffield. That would be really lovely to move forward.
Yeah, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for a sponsor out there who'd like, absolutely, who'd like to sponsor a trainee, and the new garden would be amazing.
Yeah, if one of your listeners would like to do that, would be absolutely fantastic. Get in touch with us through our website or get in touch directly with Horatio's. I'm sure they'd be delighted to hear from you. We're really keen to support Horatio's and to support our trainees. What we want to do is to help our trainees launch themselves into their careers and to work with a worthwhile cause at the same time. So it's a fantastic opportunity.
And thinking about therapeutic gardens, it's really, I've seen it accelerate probably in the last, since COVID probably.
Oh, yeah.
And therapeutic gardens has really become a thing. And just gardening and getting out in your garden and getting in spaces and how it can help your well-being and mental health. And I've done quite a lot of research on it, and I've spoken to people at the RHS about it, and a postgrad student who was doing some work on being in your garden. And just all the scientific evidence is there. It's already there.
Absolutely. So it's about, it's something we should all be doing to improve our well-being, just getting outside. I think there's been adverts recently, get outside for 20 minutes a day. Just that's all it takes. And in that lovely green space, you're really experiencing all everything that we get from nature. And I know that you're like me, you look out the window and you've got beautiful things out there. You've got flowers and it's just fantastic. It can only lift your spirits.
Oh, even if I'm having an indoor admin day like today, I still have to go out twice. I still have to go out and water the tunnels, or I still got to go out and do something. I can't sit there for looking at it, thinking I need to be in it. Even though today is freezing and hailing, I still need to go out there and have a go and pick some more flowers and have another go. So yeah, definitely recommend it. But the evidence on horticulture and therapeutic, I actually had a doctor online, and he was doing a lot around therapeutic, and Dr. Richard Claxon, his name was. He's done another podcast with me, and he was really interesting because he's a GP in NHS, and he was doing social prescribing for well-being and therapeutic gardens. And then he gave up one day a week being a GP so he could spend more time pursuing therapeutic gardening and helping people in therapeutic gardens. So I think that's a massive way forward. Yeah. That would be brilliant. So anyone out there, do come forward, put your hand up. It's a really good opportunity. So what, Sue, has been your greatest challenge in your career? Going from telecoms to horticulture is massive. Did you enjoy horticulture before, or did you just jump in and thought, this is something I want to do?
Ridiculously, I bought my husband an allotment. I rented him an allotment for his birthday. When we were both working in telecoms, I thought this would be hysterical. I drew him this lovely picture of this tumble down allotment with an old shopping trolley on it and all completely overgrown. And here you are, off you go and clear this. And I thought it'd be a great thing for him to do. That he was too busy to do that, so I did it.
That'll teach you.
But that's how it started. And then I had my children started helping me in a very sort of haphazard way, a lot of digging, not much planting going on. And that's how I decided to get into gardening and work with the WFGA. But I think probably my biggest challenge is at the moment, Roz, is being the chair of the WFGA. This is my biggest learning curve, probably.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
A small business. Do reels get you reeling? Is SEO just a three letters put together? Content planning something you know you should be doing, just never get round to it? Do join our Growth Club online. What is it? It's a supportive community. It's all about growing your business. It provides trainings and guest speakers join us every month. Is it time to work on your business and not in it? The link for more information is in the show notes. Yeah, because it's going through a period of change and growth and visibility, and you have to be everything, actually, as a chair. You have to be a marketeer, a social media whiz, a fundraiser, and looking at all the governance, and it's a massive job.
Yeah, you're scaring me. We've got an amazing board. We've got fantastic board members who come from all walks of life and have some really excellent skills. And, you know, that we've got Dan, who is a horticultural expert, and Amanda, who has this amazing garden and fantastic contacts, and James, who comes from the world of business, which is really important for us. And of course, now we have you, Ros, which is, we are so desperate for your marketing expertise that it's fantastic. So it's, I think we're really set up to go into the future now. So it's a great team, a really good experience. No. I'm really enjoying being chair. Lots to learn.
I'd love to go over to Sea Garden, because I know Tom, as in Tom Coleman's social media, he went over quite recently. Beautiful, beautiful gardens.
Oh, truly gorgeous. Yeah, and just a lovely walled vegetable garden. Oh, such envy I have. Really gorgeous.
Oh, wow. Walled garden and vegetables together. I've got envy and I haven't even seen it. So that's. I think we should have our next board meeting there. I think we should definitely do that.
Yes. Well, actually, well, I think we've got a board meeting coming up at Dan's place at Winterbourne House. Where he's going to be fantastic as well.
That's lovely too. I haven't been there either, so that'll be lovely.
Yeah, lots to see. To that.
Yeah, amazing. And what are you most proud of? Obviously, from the outside, I look at what you've done in your career changing, coming into, what are you most proud of that you've done?
I think it has to be my family. Yeah, course it does. My husband, fortunately, he came over to the green side a few years ago. He's given up telecoms and he now works in horticulture. And
does he?
Oh, yeah. A very steep learning curve for him, but he's doing an amazing job. And it's great now. We talk horticulture, we think horticulture, we go out and look at horticulture.
He's come to the green side. Yeah.
It's been fantastic. And I've got two grown-up daughters who are in their 20s and I'm really proud of them. I've got amazing, strong women who are out there in the world doing really interesting things. So I think my family is the thing that really inspires me and keeps me going.
Keeps you going. Now, I do that with my youngest daughter, who's a psychotherapist and counsellor for adolescents who are going through things like self-harming or bulimia or anorexia, which of course is an increasing rate. So we often, and my eldest daughter's a lawyer, so they argue amongst themselves about who's going to get the house and the gardens. I said, I'm not gone just yet. Because the youngest would like to turn it into a retreat, like therapeutic gardening retreat. I'm sure it would be lovely.
Yeah, sounds gorgeous.
The oldest wants to live here. So between the two of them, I'm not quite sure who's going to win this one. But in my future, I do see something on therapeutic gardens or doing something that can help out. And I'm not sure what that's going to be and when it's going to land. But I do feel that. I do think somewhere along the line, I'll do something.
I think it's something that we need to spread the word about because it's so important. We seem to have increasing emphasis on mental health, but not such great solutions. And the solution is just there, isn't it? If we can do something with our gardens and share our gardens and work with people in our gardens and that goes towards improving people's mental health, that can only be a good thing.
100%. Because it's not, the solutions aren't there for most people. And therefore, yeah, to get outside, and that would be brilliant. So I'm plotting. It needs to come to me, but I'm sure it will.
There will be something there. I tell you what, I'm going on a workshop in a couple of weeks' time. I'm going to do some forest bathing, and I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to it.
That'll be interesting. I've heard a lot about it, and hugging trees and so on.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Fantastic.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see how you get on. I used to have a friend who worked for the Parks Trust in Milton Keynes, and they did lots of that, because in Milton Keynes we've got lots and lots of, I know it's weird, people go, we've got lots of roundabouts. But I think it's the city with the most parkland and green in the UK. Yeah, it's got a canal going down the middle of it. I mean, it's quite weird. And it has something called the Parks Trust, who looks after all the parks and the greenland, which is huge. And I think, there's lots of that going on, and education and forest bathing and so on. So you can report back. I've never done that, but I'll give that one a go. And you've almost answered this one. Who's your inspiration and what keeps you going? What gets you up in the morning? Or what keeps you awake at night?
Lots of things. The speaking on your podcast kept me awake at night.
Oh.
Yeah, it has to be my family. It's fabulous to be so supportive. And I come from, my parents were really amazing as well. They were always doing some sort of crazy thing, some sort of crazy business scheme or going off on a trip, or as a child, I'd wake up in the middle of the house and in the middle of the night, and there'd be this crashing sound downstairs, and they'd be knocking down a wall because they decided to extend the house. And my husband and I call this the no-brain scheme. So So they were the purveyors of the no-brain scheme. And I hope that we have inherited that. We like to cook things up when we're on holiday, because that's when you have downtime to think about things, isn't it? So we come up with the latest no-brain scheme and off we go again and come back and we're all infused.
That's why holidays are a good thing.
Yeah,
you to just pen and paper and just think about what next, really. But yeah, harebrained scheme is a good idea. I like that idea. Maybe I need to have more of those. So three quick questions. What was your childhood dream job? What did you want to be when you were at school? I went to the careers advisor. What did you say you wanted to be? Do you remember those careers advisors?
When I went to the careers advisor back in the 80s, they told me that I should be a secretary and I needed to learn outrageous. Couldn't believe it. I absolutely refused to learn how to type after that. I wanted to be a vet. That was what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with animals. I grew up in rural Suffolk and we had dogs and cats and donkeys and chickens and all sorts. And I really wanted to be a vet. But there was a bit of a flaw in that argument. I was absolutely rubbish at science and I was terrible at school.
But I wanted, and this will make you laugh too, I went to the careers officer who was Mr. Bundy, and it was one of these really quite old, if I remember. I always thought he was old. He had this red face and he was quite big and he had this stout stomach. And he told me I wanted to be a doctor and I wasn't clever enough to be a doctor. So he, rather than politely tell me I wasn't clever enough and I wouldn't get 3 A's at A-level, he told me that I should go and be an optician or an osteopath or anything else. And I was like you, I was like, I was beside myself because I wanted to be a doctor. And how dare you tell me that I can't be? But he was actually quite right, I have to say, with hindsight. But it is quite funny, those days of career advice. But I hope youngsters these days are a lot more worldly and know exactly, they look themselves and find out. I don't think career advisors in schools exist anymore, but it was funny.
Yeah, I think there are some. When I was in teaching, I used to go into schools and see some of the careers advisors, and I remember having a long conversation with one and saying I teach horticulture, and a little lad at the back of the class piped up and said, oh, I really like horses.
Yes, not much knowledge around careers. No, yeah. That needs a bit of work. There's not much around careers in horticulture, is there? Yeah, except it's really weird. I've had a couple of students work here during the summer holidays. And one of them started when he was 16. He's now 21. See, that's what I mean. I don't let them go. So he started when he was 16 and off he then, 18, went off to Cardiff University. And he decided he was going to do a maths degree, but he wasn't that keen. Bright, but he wasn't that keen on doing a master's degree. And we were trying to convince him what he really wanted to do was horticulture, but he wasn't having any of it. Off he went to do maths. At the Christmas, he came home and said, you were right, I'm not really made for maths. I don't really know what I'm going to do. So he changed to economics for the remainder of the year. Then he came home in the summer and went, I'm really not geared for economics either. And I said, but they're both sort of desktop. You've been out looking. So he did change and he's now doing archaeology. Because he thinks, at least that gets me outside. So he's gone from maths to economics, and now he's doing archaeology, which he loves. So he's out digging. He loves digging.
Excellent.
And I said, that's what we taught. You have to dig. So he's just recently been here now. He's coming up to the end of his second year now. And he loves it. And I think we probably gave him that. We gave him this love of being outdoors. So I'm proud of that. Yeah, I'm glad he didn't do a maths or an economics degree. I got him outside. And he knows a lot about horticulture now, which is amazing. Yeah, he comes and sorts all our irrigation system out for us and cut all our tulips. He does anything I ask him to. He's amazing. Yeah. And if you won the lottery, what would you do?
Oh, I don't know, Roz. I think I'd do more of the same, really. I'd probably just get a bigger garden. I'm not interested in a bigger house because you have to worry about the cleaning and decorating. But a bit more garden would be fantastic, more plants. I'd like some big trees. That would be lovely.
Yes. Yeah. I think I'd probably have a therapeutic garden centre or something like that. I wouldn't move, I don't think, like you. But yeah, I'd have more plants, more trees, more help, and everything would just be bigger outside, but definitely not inside. No, yeah. I'd just be out. Really? No, I don't want all that. So what next for you, Sue Reed? What next for you? What comes next? What comes next for the WFGA? What's next for you? What would you love to do next?
I think I'm doing it now. I've got a fantastic setup. I effectively work myself because I'm an independent assessor. I'm an examiner. I work when it suits me or when it's convenient. A lot of it around the exams, to be fair. I can tailor it to what I'm doing. So that's great. And being chair of the WFGA is fantastic. What an honour. And to have gone full circle 20 years later.
That's career progression, that one, isn't it?
You couldn't write it really, could you? But it's such a great story to tell. And I want to get that story out there. We're a fantastic organisation. I think we're the only organisation nationally that's offering practical paid training to budding professional gardeners. There are various training schemes out there, but we are the only one that actually has that practical training. And it's so important to get that experience. A lot of our gardeners, they go in to be trainees, but also they do courses alongside that. So they'll do the RHS courses to get all their skills up. Fantastic, develop their knowledge. But having that practical training is just so important for building confidence and building those skills. And so I'd like everybody to know about it, know what we do. And come and join. They're a great organisation. We offer some great courses in some fantastic places. Some of the gardens that we work in are absolutely brilliant. We're in Hever Castle and, as I said, Hampton Court and Knoll Park, Birmingham Botanic Gardens, lots of places out there. And we'd love to get more gardens. We really would. So if you think that you've got a garden that you might be keen to take on a trainee, you might have a head gardener that would like to train somebody, then get in touch. We've got a website. You can find us online. We really would like to hear from you people.
Put the website and everything in the notes so people know where to get a hold of you and how to get in touch. So we're looking for people who've got land and gardens who might be able to train a trainee. And we're also looking for somebody who wants to go ahead and sponsor a trainee in Horatio's garden. So they're the two things we're going to put out there today that would be really useful.
Amazing.
Sue, thank you very much for joining me. As always, a pleasure. I'd like to thank you for coming over and I'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, Roz. It's been a lovely chat.
I look forward to next week's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate and review on your podcast app. We do have some wonderful free resources on our website at thecutflowercollective.co.uk. We also have two free Facebook communities, which we'd love you to join. For farmers or those who want to be flower farmers, we have Cut Flower Farming, Growth and Profit in Your Business. And our other free Facebook group is Learn with the Cut Flower Collective for those starting out on their flower journey. All of the links are below. I look forward to getting to know you all.